ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम थर्ड कैंटो चैप्टर 21 Conversation between Manu and Kardama, text 29 and 30. Text 29 doesn't have any purport, so I'll just read it through and then we'll discuss the verse that is written on the board. Text 30. Yata atma bhritang birjang navadha prashavishyati बीर्जे तदीये ऋषय आधास्य अंतसंजसात्मनः। Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. She'll bring forth nine daughters from the seed sown in her by you, and through the daughters you beget, the sages will duly beget children. Text 30. Tvam cha samyak anushthaya nidesham ma ushattamaha mai tirthi kritashesha kriyartho ma prapatsase. Tangcha samya ganushthaya nideshang ma ushattamaha mai tirthi kritashesha kriyartho mang prapassase kriyartho mang prapassase. Tam cha sammag anushthaya nideshang ma ushattamaha mai tirthi kritashesha kriyartho mang prapatsase. Tam cha sammag anushthaya देशांग मा उषत्तमः मई तीर्थी कृताशेषा क्रियार्थो मांग प्रपत्ससे।
Yeah.
Mataji's. Samyak properly
anushthaya having carried out
nidesham command may ushattamaha completely cleansed
mayi unto me
tirthikrita having resigned ashesha all kriya
of actions
arthaha the fruits
mam to me
prapatsase
you will attain
Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. With your heart cleansed by properly carrying out my command, resigning to me the fruits of all your acts, you will finally attain me. Please repeat. With your hearts cleansed,
by properly carrying out
my command,
resigning to me
the fruits of all your acts,
you will finally attain to me.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Hear the words Tirthi Kritesha Kriyarthaha are significant. Tirtha means a sanctified place where charity is given. People used to go to places of pilgrimage and give munificently in charity. This system is still current. Therefore the Lord said, in order to sanctify your activities and the results of your actions, you will offer everything unto me. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you sacrifice, the result should be given to me only. In another place in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord said, I am the enjoyer of all sacrifices, all penances, and everything done for the welfare of mankind or society. All activities, therefore, whether for the welfare of family, society, country, or humanity at large, must be performed in Krishna consciousness. That is the instruction given by the Lord to Kardama Muni. Maharaj Yudhishthir welcomed Narad Muni. Wherever you are present, that place becomes sanctified because the Lord Himself is always situated in your heart. Similarly, if we act in Krishna consciousness under the direction of the Lord and His representative, then everything is sanctified. This is the indication given to Kardama Muni, who acted on it and therefore received the most excellent wife and child, as will be disclosed in later verses. Jata Atma Bhritang Birjang Navadha Prashavishyati Birje Tadiye Rishaya Adha Santat Asanjasat Manaha. She will bring forth 9 daughters from the seed sown in her by you, and through the daughters you beget, the sages will duly beget children. Tangcha samyag anushthaya nideshangma ushattamaha mai tirthi krita shesha kriyartho man prapatsase. With your heart cleansed by properly carrying out my command, resigning to me the fruits of all your acts, you will finally attain to me. So, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared to Kardama Muni, and he is instructing Kardama Muni. that he will get married to a princess, that is the daughter of Svayambhuva Manu, who is the son of Lord Brahma. So we can see the creation. Bhagavat actually describes 10 different aspects. The Mahapuran has 10 symptoms. 10 symptoms of Mahapuran are Atra, Sarga, Visargascha, Jnana, Poshanam, Sthana, Poshanam, Utaya, Manvantara, Ishanukatha, Nirodha, Muktir, Ashraya. So Atra begins with Sarga, the creation. And then Visarga. Visarga is secondary creation, sub-creation. The first creation is of the universes. How the universes are created? Universes are created from the breathing of Lord Brahma. And then gradually, step by step, the creation becomes more and more manifest. Just like a building. So we are building the apartment houses. What is happening first? First we are building the shell. First the shell and different floors are built. And then what happens? Then other things. Then after this, what will be the next phase? The next phase will be the brickwork. The brickwork, the walls will be made. Then after the brickwork, the plastering will be made. Then floors will be made. Then all other things will come. The toilets, taps, basins, lights. And then what will happen? Then people will move into the house. So similarly, the creation of Brahma universe is also something like that. First, the universe is created with 14 planetary systems. So it's a 14-story building. Each universe is a 14-story building, and different floors are meant for different types of living entities. Like upper 7 planetary systems are meant for good people. Those who are submissive. More submissive you are to the Lord, the more elevated becomes your position. Earth planet is the middle planet. It's neither upper planet nor lower planet. It's in the middle, where we are, Bhumandal. And above Bhumandal is Bhurloka. Above Bhurloka is Bhubarloka. Then Swarloka, Sargaloka, heaven. Then Maharloka. Then Janaloka. Then Tapaloka. Then Sataloka. And then there are 7 lower planetary systems. Tal, Atal, Bital, Sutal, Rasatal, Mahatal, and Patal. So 7 lower planetary. So the 7 stories below. So it's a building that is something like 7 floors above ground and 7 floors underground. What happens in underground floors? The sunlight doesn't enter. So the lower planetary systems, there is no sunlight. And those who don't get the sunlight, their consciousness also is not properly developed. Anyway, so the point here is that then after building the structure, then there is a need to fill in with residents. So this is beginning, the beginning of the creation, beginning of that Visarga aspect, sub-creation. Now Brahma started. Brahma is the only person at the beginning. Brahma came into the universe straight from the navel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then Brahma was instructed by the Lord what he is meant to do. Then Brahma, upon being instructed what is his responsibility is, Brahma then started his business. So here it has been described like the first four children of Brahma were the four Kumaras. And then the Rudra came from Brahma's eyebrows, from between Brahma's eyebrows, as a result of Brahma's anger. Then there are 10 children again born out of Brahma. The 9 were the Prajapatis, and 1 was Narada. So these are the 10 children of Brahma. And then in the meantime, other personalities also came out, like from Brahma's, different parts of Brahma's body, 2 personalities came out. From the right-hand side of Brahma's body came out Svayambhuva Manu, and from the left-hand side of Brahma's body came Shatrurupa. So then through Manu and Shatrurupa, there were 5 children born. 2 sons and 3 daughters, Priyavrata and Uttanapada. And then 3 daughters were Akuti, Prasuti and Devahuti. So this Devahuti, the youngest daughter of Svayambhuva Manu was given to Kardama Muni. And Kardama Muni, then here the Lord is instructing him that he will get married. Kardama Muni will get married to Svayambhuva Manu's daughter, Devahuti. And then from Devahuti there will be 9 daughters, and those 9 daughters will be given to 9 Prajapatis, 9 sages. And then a son will be born. And that son will be the incarnation of the Supreme Personality. So this is how we see that Srimad Bhagavatam or the Puranas are giving a very systematic narration of creation. It is not some fairy tale, it's not some stories. Can the story be so analytically, systematically presented? Stories, you don't get linked. You have to accept it is there. In the story, you may get the name of the father. At the most, you can get the name of the forefather. But you don't get the name of right from the beginning, like the genealogical table. Bhagavatam presents it. The Purans are presenting it in that. Like, think of some famous story. Let us say, Romeo and Juliet. Right? It's a very famous story. We get to know Romeo's father's name is there. I don't think Romeo's grandfather's name is there. Or Superman. Superman also, the father's name is there. He came from another planet. His father's name is there. But who is your father? His father's father? No trace. But here, not only father's father, like all the way to the original father, from that downwards, all the names are presented. Like when we look at Lord Ramchandra's dynasty, we get to see an unbroken chain of succession. Like this is the, and we see that that culture is very common in India. This culture is to keep the ancestral line. Like they go all the way back. Like there is one family here, they claim that they are from Sandipani Muni's family. And like at least I remember, like in my childhood, like everybody, every family had at least 10 generations up they could track. Or they could, in many cases, they went all the way back for hundreds of generations. Especially the Brahmanas, they always, and Kshatriyas, they always used to maintain the line, from which line they are coming. So this is history. This is not some concocted stories. So this is how the Vedic culture, the Vedic scriptures describe the creation from the beginning. Like how different living entities came. We see birds, we see snakes, we see animals. Even they have their origin. Even they have their history. Their genealogical description. Like for example, we know the birds. Where do the birds came from? Birds came from Kashyap and Vinata. Garuda and Arun are the two first birds. Then from them came other birds, Shampati, Jatayu, and etc. And it goes, so the family line is there. The snakes, again, coming from Kashyap and Kadru, another wife of Kashyap. So not only the human beings have their origin recorded, even the animals and serpents and birds and beasts, all their origin has been very systematically recorded. So now, in this verse, this verse that we are discussing, text 30, Srila Prabhupada in particular emphasized one aspect of this verse. That is Kritashesha, Tirthi Kritashesha. That Tirthi Krita Ashesha. Tirthi Krita means having resigned everything. Now the qualification of Kardama Muni has been described here. The Lord Himself is admitting that you have surrendered everything to me. That's why you are so special. Like what is the ultimate characteristic, ultimate quality of a living entity? The ultimate qualification of a living entity is to be able to surrender everything to the Supreme Personality of God. The goal of life or the quality of our success is not going to be measured by how much we steal from Krishna. Nowadays that's what is happening. People are recognized by the amount of wealth they have. Like, who are the famous people? The famous people are, say, one very famous person is Bill Gates. What is Bill Gates worth now? Last I remember was $64 billion. $64 billion. Can you imagine how much money it is? It's a lot of money. And he is considered to be a very famous person. Why? Because he has so much money. Or most of the people are recognized by the amount of wealth or amount of fame they have accumulated. And the fame also is connected to wealth nowadays. Now collection of wealth, what does it mean? Where did they get the wealth from? Is that wealth from their father or grandfather, or did they get the wealth by dint of their own effort? No, they stole Krishna's wealth. So in today's world, in the materialistic society, the more one steals from Krishna, the more renowned and more respectable he becomes. But the actual human culture teaches us not to steal from Krishna, but to offer everything to Krishna. Everybody may not be able to offer everything, but the culture should be give to Krishna as much as you can. Give. Give to Krishna. You may not give everything, but give some money every month. And it should not decrease, it should increase. Give more. Like today, one may be able to give 50% of his wealth. But his attitude should be, tomorrow I should give 51%. Day after tomorrow, 52%. And in this way, the amount of surrender should increase. That is the proper spiritual culture. And when somebody is able to offer everything, not only his wealth, like this is a Vedic culture. The kings used to give up everything. Give everything away. I remember in the recent years, meaning maybe a few hundred years back, there was a king called Harshavardhan. And it's in the history, it has been recorded, that Harshavardhan performed a charity. And in that charity he was giving everything away. He gave everything away. So finally, when he didn't have anything more to give, he took off his crown, he took off his ornaments, and finally he took off his clothes and gave it away. I don't know whether today's history read. Did you all read Harshavardhan's anecdotes? No, it was not in the history. When we are young, that was a part of our history. Personalities like that were recorded. Malini, did you hear about Harshavardhan? You did. At least in your time, he was recognized. Nowadays, they are not included in that book. History book. So this was the Vedic culture. Even the kings used to give everything away. And not only Harshavardhan, there were many others, I remember. Shibi is of course another, not Ashok. Who is saying Ashok? Ashok didn't do anything. He became Buddhist and promoted Buddhism. Shibi's thing is there, but he was an incredible personality for giving out in charity. But even in the recent past, when Narottam Das Thakur was first organized the Gaur Purnima festival, Narottam Das Thakur was the first one to actually have a festival on Mahaprabhu's appearance day. In Kheturi, he was the son of a king, but he gave everything away. I mean, he left his materialistic life, went to Vrindavan, took initiation from Lokanath Goswami, was trained by Jiva Goswami, and then he was sent back to Bengal to preach. And Narottam Das Thakur was organizing this Gaur Purnima festival. And in that festival, his brother, who was actually the king, Santosh, he started to give everything away in charity to the Vaishnavas at the end of the festival. And he also did something like that, like everything he gave away, everything. So this is the Vedic culture. So the actual human culture is not how much one is able to steal from Krishna, but how much one is able to offer to Krishna. And not only wealth. Offering wealth is good, but it doesn't end there. When all the wealth is given, then what? One considers that my body is there. So what is the purpose of the body? The body is meant for acting. Karma. To act. So that action should be offered to Krishna. All the activities should be offered to Krishna. After one offers all his wealth, then he offers his action. Then he has his mind. With his mind, what he does? He thinks of Krishna. Then he has the ability to speak. With his speech, what he does? He speaks about Krishna. Karmana, manasa, gira. Even his actions, even his thoughts, and even his words are offered. So in this way, when one is able to offer everything to Krishna, then he becomes qualified to receive Krishna's mercy. Like this is the wonderful aspect that we are seeing here. That is the wonderful aspect that we are seeing here, that Krishna is telling him, Narayan appeared to Kardama Muni, and he is telling him, that with your heart cleansed by properly carrying out my commands, resigning to me the fruits of all your acts, you will finally attain to me, you will finally come to me. So this is the ultimate goal that every human being should pursue. Try to give to Krishna. Offer everything to Krishna. And when we are able to offer everything to Krishna, then we become qualified to receive Krishna's mercy. When we offer to Krishna, we shouldn't think that we are doing a big favor to Krishna. When a thief gives back his things, stolen goods, back to the owner, is he doing a favor to the owner? Or he is just benefiting himself by absolving himself from the crime that he has committed. Okay, thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any question? Yeah.
So in the translation, it said that by properly carrying out my command, you are purified. So, Prabhupada also writes in the Bhagavad that by following the command of Krishna and his devotees, one becomes purified.
Yeah.
So, the thing is that what gives us the inspiration and how do we develop the desire to, you know, execute the orders or directions?
You see, ultimately, everything is motivated with the consideration of gain. When we lose, we do not become inspired to do that. But when there is a possibility of gain, then only we become inspired. So the motivating factor ultimately is the consideration of gain or benefit. Right? So when we recognize that by offering Krishna we are actually gaining, by following the words, instructions of the Lord in the scriptures and the words of his devotees, we are going to benefit, we are going to gain. Then we naturally become inspired to do that. Like say you have a disease and you take a medicine and you see that the medicine is working, that means you're benefiting. And that inspires you to continue with that medicine. Isn't it? But if you take some medicine and that is instead of curing you, it's causing you more damage, will you take that? So, you see, ultimately we always have to recognize that everyone is motivated by a selfish interest. But unfortunately in the material platform, everyone is motivated by his materialistic selfish interest. But on the spiritual platform, our spiritual selfish interest is the motivating factor. That is the real benefit of the self. The material platform, we are acting with the interest of the body. Not the body is not our real self. The real self is the soul. So what benefits the soul, that is the lasting benefit. What if you get a lot of money but tomorrow you die? Then what's the use of getting that money? But if you can get something that will stay with you even after death, isn't that of a greater benefit? Now that is the ultimate driving factor, this awareness, this knowledge, that whatever we are doing on the spiritual platform is for our ultimate benefit. For the time being it may be difficult. For the time being you may be losing. When everybody is so-called enjoying in the movies, in the theaters, in the restaurants, in the pubs, some individuals stay away from that and they cultivate their spiritual life. Like they're missing out on something that people are enjoying, apparently. But what they're doing is going to give them the benefit which will last forever. So that is the intelligence. So the driving factor is the, we will be guided by proper intelligence. Like an you see, more intelligent one is, more he is able to see beyond time. Like a less intelligent person will think, why should I study? Let me play with my friends. Right? But a more intelligent person thinks that I have to sit for the exams, and in order to do well in my exams, I have to prepare myself, and then I have to complete my school, and then I have to go to college. In the college, I should prepare myself to have a nice career, and then after that, I'll get a good job. So, you see, he's making a plan, which is, an intelligent person makes a plan 15, 20, 30 years beyond. And that's why proper guidance is necessary. A child may not understand that. But the parents, an intelligent parent makes him understand. That don't do that. Don't waste time. Prepare yourself for a brighter future. So similarly, on the spiritual path, the devotees guide that way. That look, these are the ultimate benefit. That's why the devotees actually give us the reminder what to be done and what's not to be done. And when you follow the instructions, then you get the required result. And that is the proof that yes, it is true. If I act in a right way, I will benefit. And that benefit is spiritual benefit. That benefit is our ultimate benefit. Okay. Yes.
As you're saying, like, it's so true that, you know, like, our selfish, one way it is our selfish motive that really drives us even towards the spiritual activities. So, like, our thinking is like, okay, let me go to Vrindavan for my own purification. Rather than we don't think that, okay, let me go to Vrindavan to be pleasing to Guru purification. So, how to actually bring about that change, or is it not required?
It will happen according to the maturity, advancement. Initially, if you are thinking that let me go to Vrindavan for my spiritual advancement, even then it is good. You are moving in the right direction. But then when you become more advanced, then you get to realize that, oh, when I go to Vrindavan, Krishna will be pleased, Radharani will be pleased that I came. So this is how, with the maturity, with advancement, the awareness will develop. Yeah, initially it's okay to think. Like, whatever one does, with whichever motive, whatever one does in Krishna consciousness is all beneficial. Even to aspire for material gain, if one surrenders to Krishna, even then it is beneficial. Chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukriti na arjuna artha Artharthi jigyasu gyani chavartasya. Even if in distress one surrenders to Krishna, benefit, there will be benefit. Even if one surrenders to Krishna for the sake of getting some material opulence, so with whatever intention one surrenders to Krishna, jena tena prakarena mana Krishna niveshayata. It doesn't matter in whichever way. Focus your mind on Krishna. Surrender unto Him. Because we take a step forward without even knowing. It's like a baby playing in the field. Right? Completely forgot his father. But then at one point, you know, if he just says, Daddy, Daddy, where are you? All he has to say is, where are you? Daddy, where are you? The father will come and pick him up. So that is how Krishna reciprocates when we surrender to him. On our part, we simply have to surrender and rest. But, as it has been pointed out in the verse, that intentions must be pure. Because Krishna is very merciful in one hand, but at the same time Krishna is all cognizant. So if there is some impurities in our heart, Krishna will detect that. If there is some cheating propensity in the heart, Krishna will detect that. But even then, if we surrender to Krishna, Krishna will say, okay, come. Krishna says that it's actually in Ramayana when Vibhishan came to surrender, there was some doubt whether they should accept him. But Ramchandra told that even one with deceptive attitude comes, surrenders unto me, I accept him. So even if one comes to harm to the Lord, but surrenders to him, the Lord will accept. So what to speak of when that surrender is genuine? Like there are some instances, the thief came to the temple to steal Krishna's ornaments. He was attracted. He was a thief. He became attracted to Krishna, not because of him, but because of his ornaments. But Krishna accepted that attraction that he developed, he turned it into devotion. So although Krishna can detect our impurities, at the same time Krishna also has the ability to purify our hearts. Therefore somehow or other we should just surrender unto Him. The rest will automatically. Yes, Radhapari? Did I say 50%? Only? No, that was just for the sake of saying it.
I want to ask that sometimes it happens that we get money and then we want to spend it all for getting things for Krishna or Radharani, like buying some ornaments or something,
Well, when you offer everything to Krishna, Krishna will send you the chariot to take you to Vrindavan. You don't have to buy a train ticket or a plane ticket. He will send the chariot. Yes? Well, in the process of procreation, it multiplied in various forms. That's how we have to understand. That also is there. It may not be with the insects and animals, but, you know, say for example with mankind, you get that. Like how different varnas were created, how different aborigines were created. Then you can also get the different demons, how they appeared and how their line is. They also came from those Prajapatis. Like the Danavas, or Daitas. The first two Daitas were Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, the two sons of Diti and Kashyap. But from them came different other deities like Prahlad, Anulad, Sanglad, Kalnemi. There's a whole history of them. Then their children, their children, their children. So it multiplies. That is different. That is the nature according to his guna, according to his past karma. He develops this attitude, propensity. There are basically three types. In goodness, in passion, and in ignorance. But then among them there are mixtures. There are sheds of goodness. They are sheds of passion. They are sheds of ignorance. Yes, Nanda Bhai.
In our greatest devotee's life, before we come to Krishna consciousness, in ignorance we have done everything which we should not have done, like stealing Krishna's property. But once we come to understand what is what, and then when we progress over a period of time, at what stage of life we realize that we are almost here.
It will depend upon, as I said earlier, depend upon one's advancement. More advanced, it's not according to the age or ashram. It's according, you see, there are two sides of it. One is, as you said, like stealing from Krishna. But then also, then another thing is that dependence upon Krishna. And Krishna provides. Like when one is in the material nature, he has his needs. And Krishna provides for those needs. But we must accept those in the form of prasad. Like we need food. And the food is coming to us by Krishna's mercy. Krishna is providing the food. But what is our attitude? Offer those foods to Krishna first and then receive it as Krishna's mercy. Then what happened? I mean, you see the change of mentality. Not only not stealing from Krishna, but recognizing that it belongs to Krishna and offering it back to Krishna. And then receiving what is coming as Krishna's mercy. So the need is always there. But the fulfillment of the need is taking two different shapes. One is grabbing it away from Krishna, or other is receiving with gratitude towards Krishna. And as a result of that, the consciousness will change. And come to think of it, what is the ultimate goal? What is the final point of life? The final point is death. At that time, you have to surrender everything. So life, human life, is actually meant to prepare for that moment. When we'll be prepared, we'll be able to offer everything to Krishna. Right? So this is a preparation. Now we are trying, probably we are able to give something to Krishna. We may not be able to offer everything to Krishna, but we can at least prepare ourselves that someday I have to offer everything to Krishna. Now I am not able to do it. Doesn't matter. But someday I must offer it. I should be prepared to offer everything to Krishna. Then what will happen? When the time will come, when we have to offer everything to Krishna, we can say, now the time has come. And at the same time, material nature will make the arrangements. You see, when the body is healthy and strong, you need a lot of food. But when the body is dying, then you don't need any food. Right? When we are healthy and strong, then we need to breathe. We need oxygen. But when you are dying, when you are about to leave the body, then we don't need any oxygen. So this is how, by nature's arrangement, the needs of the body will be reduced. And it will come to a point when the needs of the body will come to a zero. And at that time we can at least say that now I don't need anything. Right now, there's no need to artificially do that. When we have need for food, when the body needs food, give it the food. When the body needs to drink, when the body needs to breathe, why should we deprive the body of that? That's the difference between a yogi and a devotee. Yogis are depriving them of food, drink, air. But a devotee accepts everything, whatever is necessary, with Krishna consciousness. Any other question? Yes.
Before I ask the question, it reminded me of something in Guru's question. I heard that in Delhi there's a devotee who gives all his entire salary to the temple, and next month he takes a loan from the temple and he pays it back in the next month's salary and again takes a loan.
Yeah, wonderful example. Yeah, that's very nice.
And the question is not quite related directly to this class, but I just wanted to ask, when we dance in the kirtan, nowadays, there's different devotees, there's different systems of dancing, someone's dancing his own style. So I just wanted to ask, is there a kind of, a particular system only that dance only in this way? Or if someone may invent a little something new, but it might look nice and everyone.
Well, difficult for me to say because I'm not a choreographer. During Prabhupada's times, devotees used to dance in their own way. But it's nice if it's systematic, especially when you go on Harinam. Like Indradumna Maharaj does that. It's very well choreographed and practiced before. So everyone's movement is properly synchronized. Like sometimes here we have, here also it's nice, some devotees, some of the local devotees, what's there? Some boys come, Manoj and Bipin, yeah. They dance very nicely. The girls also dance very nicely, some of them. And it's quite well synchronized. It looks nice. I heard many devotees comment that, those who are visiting, that the way the kirtan dancing goes on in kirtan is very nice, because it's well synchronized. But it is not done, systematically. I think it will be good to do it in a systematic way. I was telling them in Australia, we had a festival. Actually, the Indian consulate organized a festival, the Holi festival. It was not during the Holi time, but it was a 3-day long weekend long program, and we played quite an important role there. And we had a kirtan on the stage, and the devotees were dancing. And I was telling them that it would be nicer, because you see, when there is such a huge gathering, thousands of people are watching, the presentation should be of certain quality. That means quality. You see, quality comes out of preparation. You prepare properly, the quality will improve. If you just haphazardly present something, there won't be any quality. So there is a need to systematically coordinate, systematically organize.
Guru Maharaj, there's a
Yeah, he got it from the further pious activities of the last life. But it was somewhat better, but ultimately who does it belong to? Who does it belong to? Everything belongs to Krishna. Therefore, isn't it better to take his permission and use it? So that is the point. Take his permission. My dear Krishna, I got it by your mercy. Thank you very much. Actually, every culture has that system. Like the Christians, when they get, before they eat, they thank God for the bread or the food that they got. They thank Him. Of course, we don't, because we know that He has, like the way the Father provides for His children. So the children don't need to thank Father for that. But there is a better way to thank Father. How? By being obedient to the Father, by acting according to the Father's will. Yes? The universe was created with 14 planetary systems. Just the example I was giving of the construction of the building. Like when the thing is being constructed, like the shell is coming up, but along with that there are different floors are also being casted. Slabs are being casted. Yeah. Okay, thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.